This is the Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX. Sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer. And by Anderson Hospital, a Newsweek World's Best Hospital. Now, the Gas House Gang on KMOX.
It's Monday. It's a new week. It's a new show. It's Chris Ranji. I'm Tom Ackerman. Our producers are Matt Pajeski and Frank Ladd. The Gas House Gang on KMOX. What's up, buddy?
I know all you want to talk about.
You do? Are you sure?
I know what it is.
Well, the Gas House Gang is, as I've told you, getting very popular. People are weighing in. They love the show. In fact, it seems like everybody these days is on board with the Gas House Gang, and we could not appreciate it more. Everybody, that is, except Don from Farmington.
Yes, I'm trying to listen to Gaslight on the Cardinal baseball, and all they're talking about is football. Please don't tell me that this is going to become a football show. It needs to be Cardinals. There's plenty to talk about. And if not just the Cardinals, but about baseball as well. Please take care of this. Get Ackerman off of his football.
Thank you, Don. Get me off the football. So we are going to thank you, Don, for promoting the fact we are going to talk some baseball on the show. This is a very important couple of weeks coming here as the Cardinals transition from John Mozeliak to Chaim Bloom and from 25 to 26. And that is on the way. In fact, the voice of the Cardinals, John Rooney, is going to be with us at 12:30 today as the Cardinals play in San Francisco tonight. They had an earthquake in San Francisco.
Yeah, 4.3 this morning.
Mm-hmm. I'm told by one member of the Cardinals party that it rattled the room pretty good and got him out of bed at 3 a.m.
Oh, mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's a 4.3 is nothing to sneeze at. It's not like that 7 or 8 or whatever in the hell that was that interrupted the World Series and killed a bunch of people. But still, it'll get you out of bed.
Well, we'll hear what Rooney has to say about that. Coming up, we will talk a lot of baseball and about what we saw over the weekend. Nolan Arenado stepping away perhaps for the last time at Busch Stadium. John Mozeliak does step away for the last time at Busch Stadium. And my conversation with him on that topic. And when will Chaim Bloom speak to us and or the assembled media? That could be coming within a week. We'll kind of let you know what we're hearing there as to what next week could entail. But first, buddy, I'm here to tell you, I love the game of football. And, you know, I
is this about the Bears?
It is. I want to start with that. Okay. I want to start with that. We'll work our way backwards. But right. I was so happy for you yesterday. I'm sitting there watching that game. I have some fantasy interest in Caleb Williams. But I build this game as, I'm going to tell you the honest truth. Well, it's all on record because I talked about it on Sports on a Sunday morning. I do NFL picks at 11 o'clock every Sunday. And I said, Chicago and Dallas, there's two teams right there that nobody gets hyped up more and gets their fans riled up more than those two franchises. And no franchises get let down more than the Cowboys and the Bears. That's what this game is. And I said, I don't believe in the Bears yet. And I'm picking the Cowboys. And I picked them. I picked the Cowboys. Wow. On Sunday, based on what I thought was a pretty decent rally and win against the Giants the week prior. And I thought, I need to see more out of the Bears to let me know that they can win a game like that. I thought it was going to be a shootout, and I was wrong. It was one-sided. The Chicago Bears dominate 4 TD passes from Williams in a 31-14 victory.
And one of them to Luther Burden.
Burden, and had at least 2 catches I'm aware of.
He had one for a first down.
Yeah, where he bowled somebody over, but he had the 65-yarder.
Yep. 101 yards total.
Mm-hmm. Buddy, I mean,
right?
I'm telling you, that is fun. And I've been saying to you, to David Kaplan, to everybody who's a Bears fan for years, how are they not good? That is the team. You can sit here as a St. Louis fan from afar and look at the Bulls, the Blackhawks, the Cubs, the White Sox, whatever sport you want to name, there is only one team that unites that city. Just one.
That's it.
And it's the Chicago Bears.
Let me tell you what it is, Tom. And this is a lesson for all sports. Ownership, ownership, ownership. It's everything. Your owners are everything. Who owns your team is everything. Because it literally, they say the buck stops here. That's where it is. It is with the owners of whatever franchise you root for. If you have good owners, smart, willing to invest, willing to do it right, willing to stay ahead of the curve, you're going to have a good team. it will filter to the roster. Always, always, always. The resources you allow them to use, the resources you give your general manager or your team president or whatever we're talking about, it is all about the ownership. And they have had pretty, and I don't think it wasn't malicious. They just haven't had owners that knew what they were doing for a very long time. That's the problem.
And they have a coach who I think has a lot of promise in Ben Johnson. I love what he said after the game yesterday to the media and the press conference. He said, we are going to enjoy this one tonight.
Yep.
And we have work to do. We have a lot of work to do. We're 1-2, and it's time to get moving here. Something along those lines. So I'm happy for Chicago, and I'm happy for the Bears.
Chiefs got their first win. Chiefs are going to the playoffs, so all that hand-wringing is silly.
Now, that game was not good. That was one of those
that was
same old boring, ugly NFL game. In what I will admit, remember I told you how much I was down on the NFL, and not as much down, but just so much more up on college football. That was fun yesterday. I caught like 3 blocked field goals in about 10 minutes. I mean, it was crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy what went on in those games yesterday, including a winner for the Eagles against the Rams.
That was an unbelievable finish.
And a block by the Jets that looked to have won it for them, and then the Bucs came back and scored and won the game.
So if people were not watching the Rams-Eagles, the Rams were lining up with 3 seconds left. They were bleeding the clock, bled it down to 3 seconds,
and
were
lining up. Stan Kroenke's team.
Stan Kroenke's team, yes. Was lining up for the game-winning field goal. They were down by 1, and they got the damn thing blocked.
The guy who ripped the team out of St. Louis unfairly and trashed us on the way out.
So, painful loss for the Los Angeles Rams yesterday.
Oh, man. So sad.
But, Tom, let's go ahead. Let's get there, man. This is the one you've waited 12 minutes to get here.
I have waited a long time for this moment, and it's not just... This has nothing to do with Illinois. They just happen to be in the way. Indiana has been unfairly trashed by, I think, Kirk Herbstreit kind of started this, and I love Herbie. You know that I do. But he kind of started this, and so did some other big national voices that people trust and listen to, that Indiana did not belong in the college football playoff because they hadn't played anybody, because they have a soft schedule. Never mind the fact that last year they had on the schedule, ready to go, Michigan and Washington, the two teams that played for the national championship. It just so happened that neither team was as good that time around, although Michigan did beat Ohio State later. But they beat both of them. They killed Nebraska 56-7, and everybody kind of wrote that off because Nebraska wasn't any good. They lost 2 games last year. One of them was to Ohio State on the road, and one of them was to Notre Dame on the road in the college football playoff. I'm not sure there's a team in the nation that's winning that game against Notre Dame's not losing their first ever college football playoff game on their own field. They also smoked Purdue 66-0 between those 2 games, but that's beside the point. They have a coach who won National Coach of the Year, but everybody pointed at him. No, Kurt Cignetti, you're talking too big of a game, buddy. You haven't played anybody. You can't line up and start talking about your soft schedule and this and that. So they invite the number 9 team in the nation into Memorial Stadium on Saturday evening on NBC. For all the nation to see, and I mean, they flat out bullied Illinois. And they did this, nothing flashy. This was just pushing them around at the line of scrimmage. They went after, it's very surprising to me that Brett Bielema and all the Illini fans who are listening right now know that I'm right about this. That team is supposed to be built from the inside out. Very surprising that a Brett Bielema team would be so porous on the offensive line that Indiana did whatever they wanted and brought Luke Altmyer, a very good quarterback, down over and over and over again, throwing him around like a rag doll. And then on offense, just plowing away space for their running backs to do whatever they wanted, not to mention Fernando Mendoza threw 5 touchdown passes. So it was just a thorough and a block punt for a touchdown. It was just a thorough beating that got away from Illinois. Could have gotten away from anybody. I'm sorry to my Illinois fans and friends that...
No, you're not.
Yes, I am.
You be sorry for that?
That they were the team.
Because they deserve it.
They're not the team that talked trash to us. They're, They're not one of those teams. What I want, I'm licking my chops for one of those SEC teams down the road.
Oh, now you're getting greedy.
That's what I want.
You're getting greedy.
But it was a great win for Indiana. I was happy about it. And I was very happy about Missouri, speaking of the SEC, about Missouri's win. They did it a different way. They played big boy football, managed the clock, and they beat South Carolina in a close game. But South Carolina was a desperate team, and they beat them 29-20.
Yeah, coming off that loss.
Very important game for the Tigers, who are now 4-0.
So good for Mizzou, man.
It was great.
They moved ahead of Illinois in the rankings. So the Fighting Illini still, they're number 23 now.
23.
Mizzou is up to 20. Your Hoosiers at 11 now.
Got to 11. It's about right. I can allow that, yes.
I mean, a 53-point. I didn't see that coming.
63-10 was... there was a point in the game where I turned... I watched... A lot of people asked if I went to the game. I watched it actually at home with my daughter, Audrey, and our two dogs. My wife out of town on business, so it was just us watching the game in the living room, made food, and just sat down and watched this game. And there was a point where I turned to her in the first half, and I said, this game is going to get out of hand. You can just see it. And it was 35-10 at halftime, and I texted my buddies that Cignetti's going to let them have it in the locker room about the 10. About the 10 points, because one of them was blown coverage touchdown. He was ticked about it, you could tell. And it's fun. It's fun to have a football program. It's nice to see them get that nod to everybody, like, yeah, you know, we're good, and don't worry about it. But now they have their challenges ahead because they have to go to Iowa this weekend. Not an easy place to play. They still have Oregon on the road, and they have Penn State on the road. Two outstanding top five teams looming for Indiana. But for right now, they can have a little fun with what happened over the weekend.
Well, so congratulations, Tom.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, that was a big win for y'all.
That was good. That was fun.
Yeah.
Let's talk some baseball when we come back, and we'll also talk to John Rooney at the bottom of the hour, and then we'll get into more of your questions, your comments. I see a lot looking pretty good here on the Gas House Gang feed, which, reminder, if you want to drop in a comment, you want to watch us, you can always do that on X, on Facebook, on YouTube. It's a really nice way to interact with us. The Gas House Gang on KMOX, the home of the Cardinals, 104.1 FM, back in a moment.
I think this team, this organization needs to go to a different route with how they go about their business. They got to let some of these young guys grow and become players and see what they have. And there's no doubt that I'm in the way of that. So I don't know what's going to happen, but obviously I do believe change is coming.
Well, he's right. It's just still hard to hear because you're talking about one of the great players, but it's the right thing to do. Tom Ackerman, Chris Ranji, it is the Gas House Gang on KMOX. You can chime in on X, on Facebook, and on YouTube, and a lot of people are, and we'll get to your comments. In fact, we'll pop Lauren's up there since this is the topic that she appreciates. Ollie gave Arenado the chance to come out on the field yesterday, take the time to appreciate the fans in St. Louis and also the organization altogether. I think people around here, this is a great baseball town, appreciate Nolan Arenado and what he has been as a baseball player. They loved him as a Rocky. I remember a lot of people, whenever he would come into town, we said, boy, wouldn't that be amazing? That's the kind of player you want on this team right there. And the Cardinals have had so many great players. Wouldn't it be great to have Nolan Arenado? And then lo and behold, John Mozeliak stole him from the Rockies and got him into St. Louis. It just so happened that he hit the downside of his career after that great 22 season in which he couldn't come through in the postseason, nor could Paul Goldschmidt, the 8-time All-Star, 5-time Silver Slugger, 3-time home run leader, 2-time RBI leader, 10-time Gold Glover.
10 straight.
Ended up not being able to deliver in St. Louis and experience why he came here in the first place, which was to win a world championship. Just couldn't get that postseason success, Chris.
No, and, you know, he was an MVP candidate, a legitimate MVP candidate in his second season here. So it's not like he didn't ever produce. He did. It's just when it came to be the most important time in the playoffs, he wasn't there. Paul Goldschmidt wasn't there. And that's really the reason you get guys like that, not just for the regular season, but you expect for them to come through for you in the biggest moments in the playoffs, because that's what they're paid for, you know?
Yeah.
So it did not work out. And I was, you know, I know that, you know, we talked to Matt Pauly earlier today, who, you know, he said that that to him, Arenado's always been pretty upfront and open, which may be true, but I still found it a little striking to hear him before the season even really ended say that I'm in the way. I'm in the way of these young players, and therefore I need to get out of the way. I didn't expect him to put it like that, not so publicly. And it's a lot of awareness. It's a hell of a lot of awareness for a guy to know what's going on. And it shows a lack of selfishness, right? I mean, that's a guy who knows what the organization needs. He knows that it's better for the players behind him. I do wish that he had gone along with that trade earlier in the year, you know, prior to the season starting, because that would have made things a whole lot simpler in 2025. For the Cardinals.
And he'd be in the playoffs. Well, they're in the mix. It's getting tight.
Yeah, but the Astros are probably going.
Yeah. I mean, man, it's, and DLW wanted to know what was the deal with him not being in the lineup, then in the lineup, then taking him out. It's just, I can explain that very simply. He played on Saturday night. So typically when you have someone coming off an injury, you don't play them the next day game after a night game. So initially they had him out of the lineup, but then Ollie Marmol and the Cardinals decided this could be it for him.
Let him have an ovation.
So we're going to put him in the lineup, then we're going to take him out so that he can walk off the field and have that ovation. And that's exactly what happened.
Well, it was very similar to what the Dodgers did with Kershaw the other night, where before the inning was over, they took him out of the game because they wanted him to get an ovation from the crowd so he could say goodbye to everybody. It's one of those things that you do for a player, and it's a great gesture. The crowd loves it, and obviously the players love it when you acknowledge them like that. And other players see that. They see how a manager treats the guys who are on his team, and I think it's a good look all around.
Let me tell you, the Astros are in a fight for that last spot. They're three games out of the AL West, so Seattle is starting to make the turn here and finish this off. Seattle's won four in a row. Houston's won three in a row. In the wild card, here come the Cleveland Guardians.
Look at them, right?
They are tied with Houston for the last wild card spot, and on top of that, they're only, Chris, a game out of the AL Central, trailing the Tigers one game out. Detroit is pulling a 2011 Atlanta.
Yeah, they've lost like nine
games. They've lost six in a row.
Games in the standings.
Yeah, and Cleveland was once 15 and a half out, and they are now a game out. And the wild card right now looks like this in the American League. Yankees, Red Sox, Guardians, and Houston in that order, with the Guardians and the Astros tied for that last spot, but only a game behind Boston. So Boston needs to pay attention as well, or they could get bumped out. The Yankees look pretty secure there with that wild card spot. In the National League, it's also gotten interesting. The Brewers clinched on Sunday. Mm-hmm. The Cardinals held them off for a little bit, but then when the Cubs lost, the Brewers soaked the Cardinals visiting clubhouse, so they'll have to redo the carpeting and clean that out. It looks like a mess. I saw a picture of it. Philadelphia has clinched the East. The Dodgers still have not clinched the NL West, but they're getting there. They're three games in front of the Padres. But the NL wild card.
Yeah, can we talk about who's in the third wild card spot right now?
It's Cubs, Padres, Reds/Mets. The Reds own the tiebreaker.
They got the tiebreaker. So right now, if the season ended today, the Cincinnati Reds are in the playoffs. Three division teams in the playoffs. And the Cardinals aren't one of them.
My World Series pick, the New York Mets, could be knocked out of the playoffs by the Cincinnati Reds.
Look, I know that Terry Francona does not take that job unless he feels like there's a real chance for them to win, but that's still tough to look at. Based on the way the Reds have sort of operated as an organization the last, 10, 15 years, and the comments that their team president made about, it was just a couple of years ago, saying, well, of course people are going to come watch Reds baseball. Where else are they going to go? You know, taking for granted the fan base because they weren't really investing. So it's difficult to see a couple of years later them right now in playoff position and the Cardinals four games back of them.
We'll take That's a break. Tough. We're going to come back, talk to John Rooney about it, and get to some of your comments. I saw one on here from our old pal Aaron Dodson, who's been hammering the Cardinals all year. He wants an apology from the ownership. We'll get into all
like
that.
Like a personal one? Like a card?
I think he wants a public one, but he would take a card.
Sure.
We will get to that as well, as we see a number of comments coming in, and we appreciate that. DLW says the Detroit Tigers might miss the playoffs altogether.
That would be nuts if they do.
Back in a moment. The Gas House Gang, sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling, SaligaHeatingandCooling.com, and by Anderson Hospital. We'll be right back.
Now, the John Rooney Conversation on KMOX, sponsored by Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and if you're a Missourian, we're for you.
Arenado is being hugged by his teammates on the infield, and he will get to say his goodbye for this season to the St. Louis Cardinals home fans. As Arenado jogs off the field, and Nolan Gorman will come out to take the spot at third, as Arenado tips his cap to the crowd at Busch Stadium.
Really a well-described moment and a special moment for the Cardinals and Nolan Arenado. Welcome back to the show, the Gas House Gang. Our producers are Matt Pajeski and Frank Ladd with Chris Ronji. I'm Tom Ackerman, and we welcome in the voice of the Cardinals, John Rooney from San Francisco. Hello, John.
Hello, Tom. Chris, how are you? I'm just sitting here at breakfast at the hotel, and I didn't get much sleep last night.
That's what I hear. Oh, yeah. Had a bit of a rumbler there. What happened last night? Describe what you felt.
I'm telling you, about 2 minutes till 3 a.m. out here, 5 a.m. Central Time, I felt the bed shaking, and I'm going, that's an earthquake. Because I was in the Loma Prieta earthquake in 1989 in the booth at Candlestick Park at the World Series before Game 3. And it didn't shake as long as that one. That one was about 15 seconds. This one was only just a few seconds, but it got my attention and went online and checked. Sure enough, 2 minutes ago, earthquake near Berkeley on the Hayward Fault Line. And then I started reading some stories about the Hayward Fault Line and how that line will probably produce more damage if they have a big one out here than on the San Andreas Fault. That got my attention. So I was kind of waiting to see if there are any aftershocks. And I guess we had like a 2.4 or 5 a couple hours ago again here. But no, that got my attention this morning.
Well, that's nerve-wracking. I mean, does it, when that's happening, because I know that we've had little earthquakes around here and I've felt them, but they've never been anything, especially jarring. So when you're in San Francisco, knowing the history of San Francisco, and then you feel something like that, how worried do you get?
Well, not only knowing the history, but being right in the middle of it, right. And with the collapsed Bay Bridge and the 880, the Nimitz Freeway, how that collapsed and it killed so many people, and just remembering the day where I had my pregame show already recorded for the World Series, and I was working with Jack Buck and Johnny Bench, and they put the pregame on just a few minutes after the earthquake, and somehow we had a phone line that was still connected with the studio in New York, and I kept trying to explain to the producer, hey, this is like, it's like a bad tornado or maybe even worse or, you know, something that would get her attention. And after the commercial break, they patched in because that was in the studio where I did Sports Central USA, and I knew how to patch it in. And then, of course, so did the technician in the studio. And we just passed the phone around for the next 25, 35 minutes until Dan Rather and some others got into the booth in the broadcast center at West 57th Street. So we were just passing the phone around, and remember Jack Buck saying to me, I don't know about you, but I thought my socks were on too tight.
John Al Michaels, it's part of his legend, what he did on ABC that day, narrating that coverage on television. And again, you were doing it from the CBS radio booth. I believe this, that sports talent, they do very well in news because you are play-by-play broadcasters, because you are trained to tell people in real time what you see. How did you make that transition? Did it feel like a natural thing that you just had to go and had to do your job?
Well, I had done a lot of news when I was younger and covered a lot of events and covered parades and one thing and another, and found that it was very similar to play-by-play broadcasting. It's just telling people what you see, and that's kind of what we did that day. We were talking about the scene there at Candlestick Park, how the shake went on for about 15 seconds, and there was a guy on one of the light standards trying to get a windsock off of there, and he said, I guess he was fortunate that he wore dark clothing because he got down from that that windsock. It was amazing how he was able to hang on and then get down safely. But it was after the shake, the crowd, you know, it was like the game was over and the Giants had won. I mean, a big cheer, but I knew we weren't going to have any baseball that day. But describing it and going through what we were experiencing at the ballpark and talking about what I was hearing, I had just bought an AM/FM cassette portable radio set up down at the wharf the day before, and I had it on the CBS affiliate there in San Francisco or here, and after hearing about fires in San Jose and what had happened to the Bay Bridge and what was going on over on 880, I said, we're not going to have baseball for a while, and we did.
John Rooney is with us on the Gas House Gang, and John, we're glad that it didn't, it wasn't worse in the middle of the night, but certainly it's startling. Yesterday at Busch Stadium was very likely Nolan Arenado's final game, and we heard the highlight coming back of him being on the field and then being called back just so that he could get the ovation from the crowd, knowing that it was very likely his last home game. What did you think of that moment?
Well, it was a big moment, and Oliver Marmol has done things like that for players in the past, and certainly giving Adam Wainwright a great send-off when he retired after getting his 200th win, and for Yadier Molina and Albert Pujols and other Cardinal players. And it was a special moment, I'm sure, for Nolan Arenado, who's enjoyed his time playing in St. Louis. And some of the plays he's turned in, guys, since he's been back from the injured list, they are just vintage Gold Glove and Platinum Glove plays that have been so much fun to watch and make you think, oh, what if we had been in that situation with him in the lineup on a regular basis, and if we could have straightened out some of the starting pitching and had a little more consistency with that, we could have been in a much different situation than we're in right now. We could be where the Reds are, where they're knocking on the Mets' door, trying to get into the postseason with a week to go. But they're going to play it out and try to win as many as we can this week with three in San Francisco. And hopefully Nolan can be in there for a few of those, and his shoulder's not barking too bad. I think it was flaring up on him a little bit because he had made some just unbelievable plays, off-balance throws, and what we've grown accustomed to watching. But I know they're going to play hard the last week.
John, finally, John Mozeliak was also recognized before the game. He threw out the first pitch, 30 years in the Cardinals organization, president of baseball operations, outgoing at the end of this season, as you know. And I had I had Mo on the show yesterday to talk about that very thing and some of the emotions he was going through. But I also had Bernie Miklas on, and Bernie really made the point at the end of the show, John. He said, look, I understand, and I've been critical, too, of Mozeliak in these last few years, but you can't just point to these last 3 years and not look at the first 27. What he did was as big of a contribution as anyone in making the Cardinals a winning, consistently winning team.
And you think of where Mo came from. He was with the Colorado Rockies, and he's pitching batting practice and working his way up with Colorado. And then Walt brought him into St. Louis. And then he followed Walt as the general manager and set the Cardinals up for more postseason play and put them in a position where, for all those years up until the last three, you go to the ballpark, you think, we're winning today. There's no two ways about it. And that's what we want to get back to. And I think eventually they will. But what he's done in building a legacy there, it's not just the last 3 years. No, there was a whole lot of winning going on under John Mozeliak, and we wish him all the best. And he had a big day, a big weekend with his family at the ballpark, and there's still a week to go in his time as the president of baseball operations. And then Heim Bloom will step in and try to pick up on what he's been doing in retooling things in the minor league system. And now taking that all the way to the top.
John, the season isn't over, but as far as the Gas House Gang goes, thank you for all of your contributions on these Mondays. So we can't thank you enough. You've done it at home. You've done it on the road. You've done it after some quick turnarounds after travel. We appreciate you.
Oh, you bet, Tom and Chris, and good to be with you. And I'll be on again Wednesday and Friday and next Monday. So we still have a lot to talk about, and then it's going to be one of the most interesting off seasons the Cardinals have had in years, and I look forward to that.
Same here. The voice of the Cardinals, John Rooney. Have a great one.
You too.
San Francisco, 8:45 start against the Giants tonight. We'll come back and answer the remainder of your questions and comments.
Now, back to the Gas House Gang, sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling and by Anderson Hospital on 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Not going again, and that pitch is hammered to left field off the bat of Herrera. Did he get it? Oh, yeah! Over the bullpen, a two-run shot for Ivan Herrera, his 17th of the year, and the Cardinals jump out on top, 2-0 here in the third inning.
Ricky Horton with the call on KMOX, Ivan Herrera. And that was right after he told reporters that he's going to have elbow surgery this offseason. And the day after, Ollie Marmol informed everybody that he is going to be returning to catcher next year. And if he's going to do that, Herrera needs to get his elbow fixed because he told everybody that he has not been able to throw it down to second base without some pain.
That's a problem.
Yeah.
That's a thing that you absolutely have to have.
Yes. So the Cardinals are going to be loaded at catcher unless they start to unload some of these catchers. I mean, they have 5 million catchers. Pedro Pajes, Joel Pozo, Jimmy Crooks, Leonardo Bernal, down the road, Raniel Rodriguez, and now Ivan Herrera is back in the mix. Wilson Contreras not returning to catcher.
So very clearly, they want to keep him in the lineup, and they want to find a way to get him in there every day, and I suppose this is the way that they want to do it, and he's going to have to work very hard during the winter, right, in order to make himself better at that position, because I think that we are he appears, at least at this moment, unless he makes some significant headway defensively, it appears like he's probably best suited as a DH. Or maybe even playing at first base, but he's not going to play at first because there's already a guy there. So I hope this works, and I hope that he really does go to boot camp during the offseason and really, really make a lot of progress behind the plate.
It would be a huge plus for Hein Bloom if they are able to get Herrera to be a good catcher.
Yes,
just if they could get a good catcher.
Yes, just to have that position done. Don't have to worry about it.
Because he's a hitter, and there's no doubt about it. And you know, they have now the instruction. I think this was part of the whole reboot of the minor league system, but just the entire thing. He can now go down in the offseason. He lives in Panama, if I'm not mistaken, in the offseason, but he needs to be in Jupiter, and he needs to be working with the catching instruction and doing all that he can to get himself back. And I think that it sounds like he's willing to do that and wants to do that. And wow, what a plus that would be. If you have a great hitting catcher, you have the jump on a lot of teams. Because the catching position is usually resigned to the guy calls a great game and whatever he can give you behind the plate. If he becomes a star hitter and he can catch, wow. But that also means that some of these players are going to have to find other jobs because you can't keep them all. Aaron, I did mention Aaron, so I want to make sure I throw that out there. He comments a lot on the YouTube page. We don't always post his comments, but he thinks that Bill DeWitt III owes the fans an apology for laughing at not showing up. It should be public. He's referring to an interview that he did with Martin Kilcoyne about developing Busch Stadium. And in that interview, he did say that he chuckles at the fans who say they're not going to show up because, you know, we need you for payroll is basically what he's saying. Gate equals payroll. When really, you know, I think that there's a way that you can discuss this with the president. He's a professional and understands fans and understands people. I think there's a way that you can have this conversation with him. Is the model now, put it up on the marquee, come and see, blah, blah, blah. We paid for him and him and him. Is payroll driving fans, or do fans drive payroll? It's payroll drives fans these days.
This is a real chicken egg question, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's so winning brings fans to the ballpark. I think it starts there, and that is the biggest percentage of it. If you win and you look like the kind of team that's not just good enough to win your division, but the kind of team that can win a pennant, people are going to show up to the ballpark. They're going to believe in you. Now, another thing that you have to do as an organization is not just put a winner on the field. You have to show the fan base that you will do anything you can to get better. So that means if you're not supplying all the major league talent from your system, meaning you're not homegrowing all these players who graduate and they contribute in huge ways. And you don't ever have to worry about free agency and getting the premier free agent. As long as you win, people don't care where it comes from. A guy going to the ballpark or a lady going to the ballpark doesn't care if the 95-win team they're watching has a $60 million payroll or a $360 million payroll. They don't care. They just want the winner. But what you cannot do as an organization is say, we are only going to win like this. So we're going to have to grow all of our own players. And that's it. Oh, there's a really good free agent available at the age of 26. Nah, we're not going to bother with that because he's going to cost too much money. When you say that you're out of that race before you even get involved, I think that does turn off a lot of people. Now, the only way you get past that is to win anyway. So if you say, well, we're not going to go get the best free agent available, this power-hitting corner outfielder who could be here for 10 to 12 years, we don't need to do that because we've got this other guy coming up who is just as good as he is, and he's going to be a whole lot cheaper. People don't care. They don't care. No. As long as that guy is good and as long as you do win. But if you say, nope, we're not even going to swim in those waters of bringing in the best free agent possible because it's going to cost us too much money, that will turn off some people. And I think it does.
In fairness, they did have two billboard players Paul Goldschmidt and Nolan Arenado, and it just didn't work out. People were excited when they got him. Leslie says, Nolan was a great player. However, the man will be paid $70 million. I fail to see why he deserves an accolade for accepting the fact that he is in the way. Tom, you are a gentleman, but you need to take a harder stand. Well, I appreciate the compliment.
I don't think you're that gentle.
I know. I know you don't. Here's the thing, all right? Arenado was told that he was coming to a contender, and he ended up in the middle of a rebuild. So he is part of that because his performance went down. But remember, he did have the opportunity to opt out and didn't. He stayed with the Cardinals. So he had a conversation that the Cardinals were going to build around him and win, is my assumption, and that did not happen. So this is not all Arenado's fault. You can applaud for Nolan Arenado for what he did coming out every day and playing third base at a high level. I don't see why that's so controversial, Leslie, but I appreciate the compliment because I do try to be as fair as possible. Al Barber, when do the Cardinals lay out the future of the team? After the World Series, no, I think they're going to get after it right away. I think it could be as early as Monday, the 29th.
And talking about hearing from Heim Bloom, I think, is what Al's talking about.
If that's the case, we will carry that live on KMOX. After the World Series is when free agency begins.
Right.
So that's when you start to see movement of players. They are still under the Cardinals' control until then. But there'll be a lot of speculation, a whole bunch, and a lot of talk about the future of the staff. You can name your staff at that point. I'm assuming Ollie will be back.
Hey, one quick thing as we say goodbye here. Yep. Not baseball related at all, but Finding Illini fans know this name. Bruce Pearl. Remember Bruce? Head coach at Auburn? He's going to retire.
That's
according to Jeff Borzello, and looks like his son Steven is going to take over. But that is a guy, Illini fans who've been around since the 80s, hate that guy.
They do.
They hate him.
For a lot of reasons. Steven,
oh, my gosh.
He called him out. Steven Pearl is a good coach, but that is a big job. Wow.
Yeah.
Auburn job's a big one.
How about that?
We'll say goodbye for now, but Ollie Marmol is with us tomorrow, the Cardinals manager, one more time on the Gas House Gang. Thanks for joining us on KMOX.